This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's a smart solar Enviro show. I am one of your co-hosts, Dio. I am not in the studio with...
I'm Glenn Ayers.
Yes. And Glenn, as you know, spring is upon us, and the days are getting longer. More time to resist the machine. Those corporados and their enablers are planning yet more deforestation for corporate solar arrays and associated explosive battery siting here in the Commonwealth and across the nation. The struggle for smarter siting continues. Sharon Weisenbaum of Smart Solar Shutesbury returns to the show, joined by Eric Bachrach of Smart Solar Amherst. How about our show quote of the week?
Stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going.
So our Enviro Show quote of the week is right in line with this week's show. Quote, what we are doing to the forests of the world is but a mirror reflection of what we are doing to ourselves and to one another. Close quote. And I think we used this quote a few years back. It's from Chris Mazur.
Yeah, I think we did use that quote, and it fits in exactly. And just to put it in perspective, what we're talking about here, the state has plans. I mean, you know, they have climate plans, greenhouse gas reductions, but we're also talking about replacing essentially all of the fossil fuel energy generation with so-called clean renewable energy. And one of those is solar. And everybody thinks that's great. I have solar panels on my roof where I live. You know, everybody thinks that's great, but Massachusetts, the Clean Energy and Climate Plan, estimates that we're going to need to put in 27 gigawatts of solar power in order to meet our goal of going carbon neutral by 2050. 27 gigawatts. And let's just say that's a lot. In 2021, now I had my panels put in 7 years ago, I think, but in 2021, the entire solar installations in Massachusetts were around 600 megawatts. That's 0.6 gigawatt. And we need to put in a lot more than that. But in 2022 and 2023, the solar installations dropped down to about half of that, about a third of a gigawatt each year. Now, you do the calculations, but at that rate, for the last 2 years, that rate of solar installation means we're going to take about 75 years to reach that 27 gigawatts of solar capacity. We're not going to reach by 2050 at this rate. So what can the state do to increase this? Well, it turns out that the reason why the amount of solar installations dropped so low is because the utilities have been delaying approvals, connections, and upgrades to the system to be able to deal with that new capacity. So the utilities are in charge here. The utilities are calling the shots, and they are not only slow walking, they're slow walking us right off the cliff. And what's the response of the state to this? Well, we'll talk about this in the interview. The state's response is to take away local control. Well, obviously, it's not local control that is causing this problem. It is the utilities that are running the show. And we saw that constantly with DOER, the Department of Energy Resources, being run by the utilities, being run by special interests. And I don't know that we have any different setup now with the Healey administration. It sure doesn't seem like it. It sure seems like industry is calling the shots, and the legislature is introducing bills, like we'll talk about in the interview, this 4501 bill, which was written by the electric utilities, for the electric utilities. And that's something that we really need to resist, because the industry should not be writing the laws that favor everything that the industry wants. That's a recipe for disaster. And taking away local control, well, that has been tried in the past, and we've talked about that on the show as well, Shay's Rebellion. And this is another Eastern Mass power play trying to grab the lands in Western Mass. And again, we will cover that in the interview. So let's get into that and have a discussion about how this picture needs to be changed. We need to have a different approach to this if we're going to meet this goal of installing 27 gigawatts of solar capacity by 2050, because there is no way we're going to meet that target or even come close to it. Right now, we're not going to meet a third of it. But taking away local control is not going to change that picture. But changing the way the industry is in control will change it.
All right. Okay, Environmental listeners, we have Sharon Weisenbaum back with us from Smart Solar Shutesbury, and also Eric Bachrach of Smart Solar Amherst. So we're going to be talking once again about Cole's plan of deforesting some of their land to put in corporate solar, something that we've covered on the show for quite some time. So welcome to the Enviro Show, folks. Maybe you want to do a brief intro and then talk about what's the latest on the Cole's plans for your neighborhood and what you guys are doing about it.
Okay, well, I'm Sharon Weisenbaum, and I have and live on a small farm on Pratt Corner Road in Shutesbury. And actually, Eric is a close neighbor of ours, even though he's in Amherst, which sort of points to how connected the issues are between Shutesbury and Amherst. So I'll hand it to you, Eric.
Thank you, Sharon. Yes, I think that the proximity of Amherst to Shutesbury kind of welds us to what's going on from an environmental standpoint, very much so. My wife and I have lived on Shutesbury Road for nearly 40 years, and when we moved here, we were told there was a whole swath of land that at one point might be developed for housing. And we understood that those were the terms that under which we moved here. In fact, we've really loved living here, and we got involved in the Smart Solar Amherst project simply as neighbors, as abutters to the proposed project. As a result of working on this project, we got involved with Smart Solar Shutesbury, and then also joined statewide coalitions and realize that what is going on in our backyard is going on all over the country, if not far beyond the U.S. So it's a project we've been concerned about and opposed to for going on 5 years now.
Yeah, why don't you just give us an overview of how many acres we're talking about? This is an industrial scale solar proposal. How many acres, how much forest would be destroyed, and how this fits into the kind of character of the neighborhood. And I think another issue for Western Mass is, you know, are there water supplies involved in the area that they'll be deforesting? Are people on public water? Is it private wells? And is all of that taken into consideration?
The project proposed, called the Shutesbury Road Solar Project, is on three separate parcels of land, primarily south of Shutesbury Road. The parcels are an aggregate are about 102 acres. And although the project itself, the perimeter of the project, will consume 42 acres of clear-cut forest land, the 102 acres is part of a much larger swath of forest land that actually extends into Shutesbury. And ironically, for some reason, we've not been able to determine how the project itself, although it's on 102 acres, they have narrowed the wetland delineation to a 42-acre parcel and set and excluded the other 60% of the land that is purportedly the entirety of the project. The 102 acres is downward sloping topographically. It's a typical New England hardwood forest, maples, oaks, and white pines. And as I said, is a downward sloping project, which at the bottom of the topography is the Atkins Brook. The Atkins Brook is a secondary tributary to the Connecticut River, but it's a primary tributary into the Fort River watershed, which flows directly into the Lawrence Swamp, which provides a large amount of public water. The neighborhood that the project is based in, that is all the neighbors, 100% of the abutters rely on private wells. So not only is the public water system in jeopardy, but so, of course, much more directly are the abutters' private well systems. So we have many, many, many concerns.
Eric, that sounds similar to what's going on in Shutesbury. I wonder if, Sharon, if you could come in and build on what Eric has said and talk about what's going on your side of the border.
Yes, thank you, Don. I think our situations in Amherst and Shutesbury are so similar, both in the threats these projects pose to our water and our climate resilience and our ability to perform the job of carbon sequestration, which our area can do very strongly. And we're also similar in that we're fighting Coles and Peirce-Guy, but to some extent, we're also fighting our local government. And also, in our case, it's the select board and town administrator. And also, we're fighting on a state level. You know, so there's sort of this three-pronged facing that we have to do, facing the Coles and Peirce-Guy, facing our local town government, and also looking at the state government. Yeah, everything that Eric said, and I think when you add Shutesbury to this, you're adding another potential 5 projects. And Shutesbury has also already accepted a 130-acre project and that has already been built. And so these are 5 additional projects in the town of Shutesbury, and we would say 6 if we include the Amherst project, which is also in the same contiguous forest. And I think something unique about the Shutesbury projects is that Shutesbury is a mountain. It's higher than Mount Toby or Mount Tom or Mount Sugarloaf and just goes straight downhill from the center of Shutesbury into, on one side, into the Quabbin, and on the other side, into the Amherst area and into the Atkins Reservoir, which is one of the main water supplies for the town of Amherst. Additionally, everyone in Shutesbury is on a well. We have no town water at all. And so these projects are very, very likely going to affect the aquifers that supply our well, both in terms of the ability for the aquifers to rejuvenate, but also for the purity of the water. And, you know, so the trees provide incredible functions of slowing water to prevent erosion, purifying water, and the slowing of the water allows water to seep into the aquifers that feed our wells. And this also will greatly affect the water quality in the Atkins Reservoir. You know, so the risk for us in Shutesbury, besides just having this beautiful contiguous forest filled with wildlife and mushrooms and doing this beautiful job of sequestering carbon and purifying our water, it's also turning a lot of our town into an industrial wasteland. And these solar power plants, they are heat sinks. So increasing the heat in our town. So for us, it's really a question of our health, safety, and welfare. And so, you know, we have had to work with our town government. I don't know how successfully, but it seems like they've made many, many decisions that favor the developer and the landowner and undermine the rightful place of the Conservation Commission. So we're working on that level. But I also want to bring up the state level. There are two bills now. I think there are 4501 and 4503. And those bills are so scary. They are threatening to take away all municipal control over the siting of solar. So all these battles we're fighting to protect our wetlands and using the laws that we have in place, that would just disappear and the solar industry could sort of bulldoze projects through. And so I want listeners to be aware of this and to sign up for the newsletter of Smart Solar Amherst and Smart Solar Shutesbury, which you can do at smartsolaramherst.org and smartsolarshutesbury.org to stay attuned. We're doing research now about these bills, and we will be providing our community with the action steps we're taking and also action steps that others can take to help to make sure that these bills do not go through as they are. So I think that's a really important update, that these bills are in the pipeline. And I also wanted to add one more thing about it, that a lot of people might say, well, a little bit of forest is okay. We have to do our part to lessen our dependence on fossil fuels. And our answer, or at least my articulation of our answer to that, is that what Shutesbury and Amherst and Western Mass have is we have forests, that those forests are what we have to do our part, which is carbon sequestration. There's nothing else that can do the carbon sequestration. And there have been studies that show that there's plenty of already disturbed land for solar to go on that can completely meet our climate goals and our goals for reducing our dependence on fossil fuels without cutting a single forest. So there's absolutely no need to cut down any of these old forests that are doing such an important job for water purification, carbon sequestration, and climate resilience in order to build solar. So definitely the solar company should be looking elsewhere and not clear-cutting these old forests or their needs.
Yeah, if I could jump in, this is Glenn. And my understanding is that these two bills you're referring to, 4501 and 4503, contain language that, like you said, preempts local control. And these have been pushed through the legislature by the one of the co-chairs of the TUE committee, Telecommunications, Utilities, and Energy Committee in the state legislature. And that's Chairman Roy. And he is proposing that these kinds of projects be permitted not at the local level, but entirely at the state level, so that there is no local control. And, you know, that upends everything about Massachusetts history, with town meeting being the decision maker, basically. You know, we have home rule and town meeting decides what happens in the town. Instead, he wants it to go to some kind of a God squad in Boston that decides things from their ivory tower in Boston, and they'll decide in Shutesbury and every other town in Western Mass where all the industrial solar shall be located in the state. And the reason for that is because the folks that live in the eastern part of the state, they don't want that in their backyards. They want it in our backyards. But then Roy turns around and calls us all a bunch of NIMBYs because we don't want all the solar for the electricity use that is being consumed in the eastern part of the state to be located in the western part of the state. It makes much more sense to have it in eastern Mass where all the electricity is being used. Mm-hmm. Franklin County as a whole is a net exporter of electricity right now because of all the hydropower on the Connecticut River and other tributaries to the Connecticut. And so it makes no sense. But I think what I'm getting at is that this is policy driven by the state. The state has decided that they're going to subsidize these kinds of industrial development projects in the western part of the state where the land is much cheaper than in the eastern part of the state. And it's so much easier for these industrial developers to put in massive solar fields or solar parking lots. They're not really fields. Put in this industrial wasteland of solar panels in the western part of the state where the land is cheap. And then they put subsidies on top of that so that it makes it very, very lucrative for these corporations to cash in on the renewable energy credits that are coming from the state and federal governments. And I think that's the policy that needs to change. Instead of passing a law that takes away local control from people who live in this area, instead, we need to pass a law that changes the priorities, changes the policies, so that these kinds of projects are no longer subsidized by taxpayers and ratepayers, and instead, the subsidies go toward putting solar panels where you said they should be going, which is in the built environment where people already live, on parking lots, rooftops, areas that have already been sacrificed to the human enterprise. And instead, we need to leave nature alone. We have little left that hasn't already been disturbed. We have no old growth forests, essentially, in Massachusetts, and we'll never have any if we keep chopping down our mature forests. And I know you've said that, but I think we need to put that all together and say the state needs to change these policies that are driving this insanity, mm-hmm. because that's what this is. This is a form of greed and insanity. And you can't blame people who are greedy for going for the money because that's what they do. But the state needs to stop subsidizing and empowering and enabling these crooks from ripping off the green energy future that we should have. And I just want to ask both of you, is that the message that we need to be telling the public, that it's really the state that is driving this disaster full speed toward a cliff?
I think that it's unfortunate that so many people are aware of climate change and the dangers of that and want desperately to do something to try to help that. And that wish of people here in Western Massachusetts is sort of being co-opted. You know, well, what you have to do is clear cut huge amounts of your forests. And when it doesn't actually serve us in any way at all, you know, financially, or we don't get the electricity. And it's very reminiscent of a story that's very familiar and has gone on in many different ways over many years. And it's reminiscent of the Quabbin, where 5 towns were destroyed for the sake of providing water to Boston. And so I think it's very similar to that now, that this area is kind of considered a sacrifice zone. But also what we have to offer the eastern part of the state is so profound. These forests and the pure air and the clean water for our state is what we have to offer and what needs to be preserved. So thank you, Glenn, for kind of telling it like it is.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, your analysis, Glenn, your assessment, Sharon. I think that it's always, in this society, follow the money. Who is benefiting the most? And it's always the fewest who benefit and the most who pay for it. What it really, to me, is people say that clear-cutting is the quickest way to solve the solution. Well, in fact, I think it's a very limited understanding of what expensive means. We have the ability to deploy solar on tens of thousands of acres of rooftops. But people purport that that's more expensive than wholesale clear cutting. But in fact, to me, it always, what has always resonated with me is, what is expensive? What are our priorities in defining expensive? And I think to jettison the forest system in Western Massachusetts, rather than deploy on what already has been defiled and tainted and built on, is to me the craziest trade-off in the world. And it's not a fair trade-off. It really is. And I think you're right, Glenn. It's how we subsidize as a state the corporatization of solar. How do we reach net zero? And as we cannot reach net zero by 2050 unless 6, 7, 8% of our forest systems are there to sequester that much of our carbon. We cannot get to net zero without our forests. And it's not as if we don't have other locations to build solar on, massive solar, but it's the state has opted not to.
And I would add, I love that. Like, what does expensive mean? At what expense? And I would also add to that, and who is it expensive for? So we have wealthy landowners, wealthy corporations, wealthy electric companies. And what they are wanting is for these local communities to carry the expense, even though they're the wealthy ones, carry the expense by giving up our water purity and our climate resilience. And asking the question when it says it's so expensive is, who is it expensive for, and who should be carrying that expense? Who can carry that expense? And to have that fall on the backs of the local communities is just completely upside down.
Well, there it is. It's same old business as usual, political power and profit, disregarding home rule and the biggest existential threat facing life on Earth.
Yeah. Let me just say that what they typically do is what's called a cost-benefit analysis. And that's because the people doing the analysis, they know the cost of everything, but they don't understand the value of things. And there's a difference between the cost and the value. And so they look at this project or these projects as, how much is it going to cost us to put this in? And how many subsidies are we going to get? And the bottom line is, are we going to make a lot of money over 20 years? And we'll get a return on our investment. That's their cost-benefit analysis. It's the benefit to themselves and the benefit to their bottom line. Meanwhile, there is no value in that equation. And the value is the value of intact forests. And like you said, Sharon, the need to meet the target of net zero. Well, now scientists are saying we actually need to meet that target by 2040, not 2050. And we have to go past net zero. We have to go net negative. That's what the scientists are telling us. And how do we do that while destroying the very forests that are going to be removing the oversaturated carbon dioxide from the atmosphere? We can't do that if we're destroying the forests at the same time, because we're counting on them to double their rate of carbon removal by 2050. And you can't do that when you're destroying them, when you're degrading them, and when you're replacing them with industrial fields, industrial parking lots, whatever you want to call them, full of solar panels that don't remove a single ounce of CO2 from the atmosphere. They don't do it. They're not replacing. They're not substituting for fossil fuel burning. In fact, we're burning just as much fossil fuels as we have for the last 30 years. As a matter of fact, we're peaking in our emissions. Every year, we're increasing the amount of CO2 we're putting into the atmosphere. So this concept of solar panels are substituting for fossil fuels, that is a complete greenwashed myth. So what we really need to do is to make sure that the money that we are being charged is going toward really truthful removal of CO2 from the atmosphere. And that requires protecting forests on a massive scale. And you talked about the Quabbin Reservoir. Well, that's an example of where the state has purchased 90,000 acres of land to protect the water supply for Boston. But how many acres of forest has the state purchased to protect your private wells? And I'll tell you, that is zero. They have never bought a single square foot of land to protect your private wells, but they purchased about 120,000 acres total to protect the water supply for Boston. And that is another example of policy that needs to change at the state level. We need to recognize that our water supplies in Western Mass come from forests, and protecting those forests is critical to ensuring an adequate water supply currently and into the future.
All right. Hey, I want to thank Sharon and Eric for coming on the show and talking about this critical issue. We have got you up on the bus stop billboard for any events that come up. And of course, we've linked to your websites. So keep up the great work, you guys, and keep in touch with us so we can update our listeners as time goes on.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, Dawn. Thank you, Glenn. SmartSolarAmherst.org, SmartSolarShutesbury.org.
All right, keep up the great fight. You folks have been at it for years, and that's what it takes to prevail. You have to stick with it, persevere, and as we say, you don't lose until you give up. So don't give up. We need to change these state policies, and we need to make sure that we're protecting the sacred forests of Western Mass, because that's where our future is.
Agreed.
All
right. Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
That was a good interview, I must say. Same old, though, on Beacon Hill. And I don't know. We're going to keep our eye on this struggle for sure.
Yeah. You know, I think that what we'll need to do is calculate, so how many acres of parking lots and rooftops will it take to come up with 27 gigawatts of solar electricity? And the state needs to prioritize that and actually penalize installations that destroy forests. Right now, they have incentives, and that's why everybody is chopping down forests to put in solar panels. But they need to penalize that. They should get zero incentives. There actually should be significant disincentives for that kind of destruction. That energy should not be counted as clean, green, renewable energy. It should not count in the equation. That policy would change the picture drastically. And those utilities would then, and these corporations, these corporados, they would then shift their focus to where they could make money, and that is by putting solar in the built environment where there's already infrastructure to handle it, and not in places like Wendell and Shutesbury and Amherst in the water supply areas. But that's going to be a tough fight because the vested interests are in charge.
Well, it's madness. I mean, think of all the boiling hot parking lots in the state of Massachusetts that do not have solar canopies. I mean, that's where the subsidies should be going. And as the planet gets hotter and hotter, of course, you're going to need more shade in these parking lots. It's madness. They're just going in the opposite direction they should be.
Yeah, and they have to start calling their programs things that are laughable and ridiculous, such as the SMART program, because it is not smart. I mean, they may think they're smart by calling it that, but it's a stupid solar incentive program. Maybe that's what SMART really stands for, but it's just like George Bush's Clear Skies Initiative and No Child Left Behind. You know, it's Orwellian. And the government has to stop promoting these Orwellian concepts that just are intended to fool the public into thinking that something is actually being done when instead they're doing the opposite. So there are a number of hearings coming up about the state dealing with the climate crisis, and DOER is doing listening sessions, and they need to hear from the public on these matters. And we need to call them out. We need to call out their BS, because that's what it is.
There it is.
All right. Well, think that we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of activities and actions and activism ahead of us. And we really need to gear up right now, get as much done as possible before the end of the legislative session, which ends at the end of June. We need to make sure that what we're doing is forcing the people who are making decisions, you know, these leaders, so-called leaders, that their decisions are considering the climate in every decision that they make. And we don't want lip service. We want to see real solid action taken. There may be some uncomfortable things that have to happen, and people may be upset, but we're in a climate emergency. We don't have time to stand around and fiddle while the planet burns. So we need to take action. That's what is needed. So get out there, raise some hell.
That's right. Time is short, Viral Show listeners. Okay, that's it for us for this show. I want you all to remember to listen to your mother. This is Dio saying adios.
And I'm Glenn Ayers, and get active.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.